Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado. No wonder Chevy Silverado is the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
This week, the Rascals mince about why Bernie won't let Hillary have her moment, the link between Trump, Duckworth, and Kirk, and the multiple problems with the Brock Turner Stanford rape case.
Today is Friday. It's the 10th of June, 2016. This is John Williams, and along with our engineer Bob Ferguson and Kristen Decker, we are ready to do the Mincing Rascals. You can hear me Saturdays on WGN Radio from 1 to 3.
I'm Steve Bertrand. I'm the host of The Business Lunch on WGN Radio.
I'm Kristen McQuarrie, a member of the Chicago Tribune editorial board.
And I'm Eric Zorn, legendary Tribune columnist.
You know, you're the only one that puts an adjective in front of yourself when
I'm trying this. I'm going to start doing that.
It's a branding thing, John.
Nobody else says that. Okay. I'm John Williams, beyond adequate host 1 to 3 on WGN Radio. Bertrand.
I'm the tallish host of the Business Lunch on WGN.
The tallish host. Kristen.
I'm Kristen McQuarrie of the Chicago Tribune editorial board, and I am short and sassy.
I like that.
Tell us something we don't know.
Hillary Clinton's become the first major party candidate to be nominated for president. Is it time for Bernie Sanders to step aside? And is this, you know, it's funny, everybody made such a big deal about Hillary kind of breaking through, and she's been such a fixture for so long that it didn't feel like such a transcendent moment to me, but I know it is, and I'm happy for her, and I'm wondering what you guys think about that, and is it time for Bernie to sort of pick up his toys and go home right now?
Well, he will pick up his toys and go home, and he'll do that, I believe, on Tuesday night after the D.C. primary. It is already time for him to do that. He's hanging on for one last hurrah, this one last primary. He seems to realize, my sense listening to him speak yesterday, and the tone, clearly, of his meeting with the president yesterday was that he was going to get behind the Democratic Party and the Democratic nominee eventually.
Just do it. I mean, everyone was just waiting for him after that meeting with Obama to say it. It is mathematically not going to work for him. She has all the momentum. Why are we even waiting until Tuesday?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I don't understand. Hillary Clinton in 2008, after maybe 4 days, three days, I think, after Obama clinched the nomination.
In California, with a big victory in California.
She called him, they had a nice conversation, and she got the hell out. Like, why is he sticking around?
Because he's Bernie Sanders, that's why. Because he's not been the traditional help-the-party-out candidate. He's been the anti-party candidate, in a way. I mean, you're surprised?
I am surprised.
I think he's made it clear he's done, and so he's just going to walk around the house one more time before he moves out, you know, with the voting on Tuesday.
I feel like he's like the Adele. He needs to depart to an Adele song, like, hello.
Just walk away.
It's me.
Well, he does risk, by hanging on even another week, he risks damaging
hello
what he's...
I'm struggling with the Adele analogy, but go ahead, Eric.
No, Kristen was in the middle of her aria there. I didn't want to interrupt.
I had no idea.
No, he's damaging now what he's accomplished, which is that he's excited all these young voters. He's brought these issues to the front at the party. He's probably going to tilt the platform a little bit to the left, however much difference a party platform makes. But if he holds on too long, then he starts to lose that. But I think he still has this window. And it was such a good week otherwise for Hillary Clinton. She clobbered him in the important primaries. Donald Trump continues to just seem to be unable to handle his other problems. We'll get to that, I'm sure, in a few minutes. And she got this great endorsement from the president. She got a really strong endorsement from Elizabeth Warren.
That he recorded on Tuesday before the polls closed. I love that. You know, he recorded it on Tuesday.
I didn't know that.
Well, yeah. I love the Rachel Maddow show.
They put the tie together. They
really
saw the tie he was wearing in the video. I think it was NBC.
Okay.
And said, hey, you were wearing that tie on Tuesday. And they're like, yeah,
busted.
We recorded it on Tuesday. Okay. Can I say one thing about the transformative moment of this? Because I agree with you. She's been around so long that you don't tend to think of her by gender in any way, but I was talking to a woman who was in her 60s, maybe, conservative. I don't know if I'd call her partisan, certainly conservative, certainly not a Hillary person. And she told me Wednesday, she goes, you know, I couldn't believe it. I was watching that Tuesday, and I see her, and that moment on the stage, she said, and I just started crying. And I don't know where it came from. And she said, and then I called my college roommate, and we got on the phone together, and we were crying together. So, you know, I think maybe it's too soon to know just how special or transformative that actual event will turn out to be.
Well, she's not only the first female, but it was a great speech. It's the second great speech she's delivered. She really does seem to have found her voice here. And it was just such a good moment, I think, for the country and for her campaign. Maybe she'll win, maybe she won't. But you're right, Steve, about the transcendency of Hillary Clinton. I think she nailed that moment. I think she said all of the right things. It wasn't too long. It was a really well-done performance.
Kristen?
No, it
we're
was.
All looking at
I mean,
we should just say, right, that she spoke differently. She seems to have mastered the microphone a little bit.
She did, and then she slipped right back into her talking points like the next day. But no, it was a moment, and I was actually surprised that all of the coverage was on the, you know, first woman and all of that, because I think we have sort of maybe taken it for granted a little bit because she's been around so long. So, I mean, I didn't get teary-eyed, but I know that that generation, like my mom is a Hillary Clinton supporter, and when my mom was growing up, you were either a teacher or a nurse, you know, so she sees trajectory.
Did you, I mean, you're not a Clinton person, clearly. Did you identify at all with the moment, like, oh, this is a woman winning this nomination?
Absolutely.
You
yes.
did. You did. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, and wasn't it remarkable to note during this little arc that 1920 is when women gained the vote in this country? Doesn't that sound insanely recent to you? 1920.
It does.
I mean, that's just insane.
And to Kristen's point, the horizons for women. When I arrived at the Tribune in the early 80s, we would run stories about, hey, this woman is a surgeon. You're a woman doctor. And we did a story about Susan Getzendaner, who's a federal judge. Like, mom is also a judge. And it was like, because we were just discovering, hey, women can do the, women can be firefighters and police officers. And that really wasn't that long ago. And
now, give us the term mail carrier. Right? As opposed to mailman.
Oh, all those sexist terms are all gone. It is a moment, and I think we will. And on the other hand, it's also been kind of slow to come in the U.S. I mean, when was, Indira Gandhi and all those, and Margaret Thatcher, wasn't she elected? Was that in the late 60s? When
that was a long time ago.
I mean, it's like other countries are way out in front of us on this, so.
Well, I think we'll really have a moment if she wins. I want to talk a little bit about the Tribune editorial today, Friday, which advises Senator Mark Kirk and Representative Tammy Duckworth, I'll segue on that, to not dwell on Donald Trump and Rod Blagojevich in their campaigns. Duckworth, remember, endorsed Blago for a second term years ago, and Kirk was slow to back off his support for Donald Trump or any support for Donald Trump, finally saying this week that the presumptive Republican nominee does not have the temperament to be president. But I wonder if Kirk and Duckworth will take the Trib's advice, don't, you know, do any guilt by association there and move on with the issue.
Of course they will.
Sure, I mean, they will. They
of course
never
they will. Die. They read the editorial. I wrote it, by the way. They read it this morning, and I'm sure they are revising their entire campaign.
Let's not go down that road. That just wouldn't be right.
Tammy Duckworth is saying, well, I'm going to just take this big arrow out of my quiver.
Right. It's just,
well, listen to you guys. Well, you're dismissing the notion. I thought that was a reasonable suggestion.
I think
suggestion.
That Mark Kirk this week distanced himself quite strongly from Donald Trump. I think that criticism...
This week that, is the operative part of that sentence.
Well, but he also was the first and did it the strongest, right?
And he was never like both feet in for Trump. He didn't do even a Paul Ryan kind of endorsement. He just sort of said he'd think he'd be voting for him. You know, obviously, it's a very politically charged decision on his part. He didn't do it because he realized this is a fairly, you know, Democratic state, and he's going to have a really hard time in the fall, no matter what. And if he's linked with Trump, then he's going to have an even harder time. Governor Rauner has distanced himself from Trump. Comptroller Munger said she's not going to go to the convention.
But see, here we are, having a whole conversation about who's linked to Trump. I mean, I don't want, and that was the point of the editorial, from now until November, to the conversation to constantly be going back to Trump. Every time he says something outrageous, we have to turn to the candidates and see how hard they denounce him, when they denounce him. Was it a sincere denouncement? We have so many issues facing this country, and this race, the Kirk-Duckworth race, is a top-tier race nationally. It is one of two seats that has like a high percentage, according to pollsters, that it's going to flip. And we could see the Senate, you know, flipping control based on races like this one.
Somebody turn off their phone.
That was me. I was trying to find my cultural moment. I'm sorry.
Was that going to be theme music to her speech there,
no,
Steve? Is that what
no,
you were
No, there's
doing?
A music collection I'm going to recommend later, and I was just trying to find the correct name of it. Turns out the speaker's on.
Yeah,
so you were not listening to anything I just said, is what you're saying.
I was, but I also think that that's a box that they have to get checked. Like, okay, I see your point about that, Kristen, but I also really feel like Donald Trump is unique in that regard. And if you are slow to, or if you don't adequately denounce Donald Trump, then I do think that will become an election issue for you. And I don't blame the other candidate for saying, wait a minute, the guy who says that Mexican-American judges can't judge a case fairly, you've got to run from that. And Kirk, I think, was slow to that.
Okay, that's true. But and so Kirk has, I don't think he was slow to it, actually. I think he was out front with, when you consider many Republican politicians. All that's true. You know, he has to disavow that. But it would be a shame if the race for Illinois senator became only, how does Mark Kirk react to the latest statement from Donald Trump?
I mean, we deserve
better than that, I think.
Well, we got bigger problems than that, don't we?
All the Republican candidates need to have a boilerplate news release that they just have ready to go.
Send
me the copy of the Trump thing. I need to sign it.
I support my party and its goals. I distance myself from the most recent remarks of our presidential nominee.
Most recent, yeah. And then just leave a blank there, and then it could be racism, judges,
veterans. Right, you just
veterans.
Cross it off. Maybe you have like a couple. You call on him to apologize. We want the apology one. We would like Donald Trump to apologize. You send that one out.
Poor Paul Ryan. I mean, the expressions on his face are just, that's what hemorrhoids looks like, man.
Listen to Eric's laugh. I love that.
Oh, my God. Well, I mean, he has to endorse the candidate. This is the candidate. God, that's a classic rock in a hard place. I feel bad for the guy. And do you guys also think this? You guys are all pretty pro Mark Kirk, and I'm coming around on that. Tammy Duckworth has been a good servant. It's a shame that we might lose one of them in service for Illinois. Do you all feel that way? Are those two good guys going up against each other? No?
I'll refrain from calling them both good guys. I don't know yet. You know, Mark Kirk has really been out of sight for a long time. He had, you know, of course, a terrible stroke and has recovered, but he's had some moments where he says pretty outlandish things. That's what Tammy Duckworth did this week. Well, it was actually the Illinois Democratic Party, but they put up a quiz comparing quotes of Trump to Kirk, and you had to choose which was which, and some of them were pretty outrageous. And Tammy Duckworth, you know, the criticism against her is that she's really a creature of the Democratic Party and Obama, and she's never, you know, earned what she has received in terms of her political stature. Those are what the two campaigns say about each other.
Well, like I say, they're both losers, and I think the sooner we get rid of them both, the better. Let's talk about the Stanford swimmer, Brock Turner, for a second. A freshman, 20 years old, found guilty on 3 felony counts of sexual assault. At his sentencing, his victim read a now famous, remarkable victim impact statement describing what the trial was like for her and how her life has been changed. Turner's father wrote a letter to the judge saying that 6 months was too severe a punishment for his 20-year-old son's 20 minutes of action. Also gone viral this week is another father's letter to Mr. Turner telling him that letters like his are part of the rape culture problem. And Vice President Biden this week wrote an open letter to that unnamed woman. He described her bravery as breathtaking. Are we being too hard on that kid and his father? What are your thoughts about these letters this week, guys?
I think we're being too hard on the father. I think that's just a parental instinct. I mean, what he said was, I mean, that's dumb, right? It was only 20 minutes. Like, you can do a lot of terrible things in 20 minutes, and this kid certainly did. But, you know, your instinct as a parent to protect your child and try to save him, I can't fault him. Anyone who is, you know, not that closely involved saying those things, yeah, you could fault him. But, I give the dad, you know, kind of a pass on that. And my other thought, I'll just throw this out here, is I hope that what comes out of this is a reminder to young men and also to young women that this binge drinking culture is very dangerous. Lots of bad things happen when people are so drunk that they can't remember what they're doing. And, alcohol lowers inhibitions, and that is usually seen as,
but listen to
usually
you,
seen as a feature, but it can turn into a bug.
Somebody slap Eric for me. This is not about promiscuity.
Kristen,
it's not about binge drinking.
Don't suggest that to her.
It is not about that.
I don't think he's suggesting that. You know, as intoxicated as she was or anyone is, that is never an excuse or a reason or anything to assault someone. Absolutely not. But there are things you can do in life to try to protect yourself from being harmed. One of them would probably be being not drinking to a point of, where you are unconscious. Don't walk alone at night. Carry, what do you call it?
Mace.
I mean, there are certain things that you can do to try to, lower your chances of getting caught in that type of a situation.
Well,
I think that's all he's saying.
Well, when I heard Eric speak,
thank you.
Well, when I heard Eric, here's what I think Eric said.
I thought
it was actually a warning to young men too.
Absolutely.
You know, don't be stupid and drink too much and take drugs and put yourself in a situation where 20 minutes can
right.
be so
or,
much.
Or where you might get into a car and right. drive and kill somebody. I mean, right. Everybody knows that when you drink, your inhibitions go down and you do things that you're not in as much control. And you know that in advance. So to put yourself into that position, male and female. And I don't think this has anything to do with, his culpability or lack of culpability. I'm just saying that's what I hope that, like, my kids take away from this, which is don't. You can drink, but I just thought this binge drinking stuff, which is common on college campuses, is really something to be careful of.
Did any of you see the criticism of the judge that he was also a Stanford athlete?
I mean, I heard criticism of the sentence, but no, I wasn't aware that they were calling into question his impartiality.
Because he had been a Stanford athlete as well. I wish someone else had heard that, because I just heard it out of the corner of my ear. So I don't know many of the details of it, but
well, I don't think the judge deserves death threats, and he's getting those too.
It just struck me that we are lambasting Donald Trump for the Mexican judge thing, and saying how can you say that he couldn't issue this ruling fairly, when there also seemed to be attacking the Stanford judge for relationships that also should not be involved in his decision. I mean, mm-hmm. It seems as if you're ridiculing one and not the other.
Bertrand sticking up for the Stanford American community.
Athletic community.
Well,
what do you
pointed,
think, John?
I think that you guys are amazing. I am surprised to hear that.
Good thing we
I'm
can't
hearing.
Reach you. Yeah.
Because it does sound a little bit like victim blaming in your case. And if your statement is about, hey, just avoid that alcohol culture, fine. But the father and the son both described what happened as a product of promiscuity and alcohol. And it wasn't who is promiscuous in that story? Was she promiscuous?
Well, that's
no,
bullshit.
No, 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 no. That
I mean,
is totally uncalled. You're right. That is completely
so I'm bothered by that. And I agree with you, Eric, that binge drinking is a problem and it lowers inhibitions. I don't know what caused this kid to assault her behind a dumpster on campus, but I don't know how many people get so drunk they do that, right? So there's something else there besides alcohol. There's something else there besides him just being so drunk that his inhibition was down because he assaulted her.
Yeah, but let's not be so, yes, you're right, but let's not be so sensitive here that we can't issue this reminder like Kristen said. You're like, if somebody is walking alone at night in Englewood and gets robbed, that's not that's not their fault. But they could take precautions not to walk alone through a dangerous neighborhood in the middle of the night.
That was really a hard point to make when Ray Rice beat his fiance in an elevator, and they said, well, then don't get into an elevator. Don't antagonize these athletes who are mercurial, and you shouldn't do that either. But it's just a very fine line between good sense, Eric, and...
Right. But I think you can separate that from the blame game. I think this is everybody is so worried about anything you say that suggests to the next people next weekend at the party what they might do to prevent this, that you're retrospectively blaming
right.
the victim.
You're making your point without exonerating
yeah,
anyone.
I don't exonerate anybody. I don't blame this the woman in this case for this for what happened here. I'm saying that next weekend, the weekend after that, especially this fall, there are going to be parties at college campuses everywhere, and that I want the men and women at those parties to remember a story like this.
I get that. Let me just ask you all one more question though, and that was the point about the letter. Eric, you said you would give the father a pass because that's his son. That letter was to the judge. It wasn't to the victim. It wasn't to the court. It wasn't to the mincing rascals. It was a letter from a father to the judge trying to, you know, minimize the damage to his son. And I'm kind of with you on that, Eric. I think I might have told the judge, hey, if my son went to jail for that for a year or two, we would all be able to repair our lives. But I could see where he would at least advocate for his son. And if that seemed insensitive to everybody else, it wasn't intended for them. You know what I mean? So I'm kind of with you on that, Eric.
I mean, I just know that
I thought it was a really tone-deaf thing to say. And then, they were talking about, like, oh, we really wanted to take him out for a steak. But he's not.
The letter I want to read next, a letter from that man's wife, from that boy's son. I wonder how she feels about this.
Yeah.
They were trying to humanize the kid, make him a real person, not just a criminal. But that I would have edited some of that. I'd love to hear what she's thinking this week.
This is, of course, typical, though, when you at any sentencing hearing, you'll get people standing up and saying, oh, he was such a good dad and such a good brother and such a, you know, people do that because, in fact, you know, people are more complicated than, I mean, this kid did a terrible thing, but you know, as his father pointed out, for most of his life, he was probably a pretty normal, nice kid, but obviously had this dark heart.
One last thing. I want to get to two more things before we wrap this up. We haven't spent much time talking about Donald Trump, and that's probably a good thing. But he's had a remarkable week, too. And I think I know what the definition of racism is, but I'm now confused about what the word misconstrue means. because I don't that was our mistake. We misconstrued what Donald Trump said about that judge.
Because he couldn't be quoted out of context because he said it like six times.
On video, right? It was on
CNN.
Sure,
it was on CNN. Or, yeah, Jake Tapper.
Tapper, yeah.
Yeah, the Tapper thing was really interesting because that was his opportunity to walk it back, as they say, after the John Dickerson thing. But no, he kind of doubled down. Was it with a Dickerson that he said he doesn't even think he can get a fair hearing from a Muslim
that
judge,
was with,
too.
That was with Dickerson, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. Steve, you have any lasting thoughts about that story right now?
Well, a couple of them. One is that, you know, this is the Muslim ban and the wall against Mexico. Those are issues about public policy. This lawsuit is only about Donald Trump. You know, and I think that's pretty remarkable that he's going to the mat and falling on a sword or pick whatever you want over an issue that's not even something that's going to resonate with the people. This is only about his own money and his own lawsuit that he's saying this. And the other thing, the reason I think it's going to resonate is beyond the, misconstruation of the racist part. It's stupid. What he said was stupid, and it sort of betrays the fact that he doesn't understand the judicial system. And the Republicans who are supporting him saying, well, we want him naming the Supreme Court justices and not Hillary Clinton, this guy apparently doesn't understand how judges work or how they're expected to work. I think that's why this is going to last longer.
I think it's okay to question the impartiality of a judge, period. Or for him to have said, like, I don't think I'm getting a fair shake or whatever. He just goes too far. You can't connect the two that it's because of this person's background and the wall and the... We question judges' impartiality all the time.
But has he explained where he thought he was wronged at all? I mean, has he said that the judge should not have made this ruling or that ruling?
Has been really fair. The judge threw out part of what he wanted to be thrown out initially and let them extend the trial date till past the election. I mean, I think the judge has been more than fair.
There was also some material that he released recently that Trump
the
fought against.
Right?
Trump fought against that. But that's, you know, those... those are legal close calls in any case. And the thing about this is that he's been urged to apologize, to walk it back. But you can't walk back when you're a bigot and a racist. That's not something you can say, oops, I misspoke six times.
Right.
You said this is who he is. This is the Donald Trump that the majority of voters in the Republican primary elected, because this is he gives vent to these kinds of thoughts, these things that he says are politically incorrect, which when they're just, you know, insensitive. And
given that, there, props to him. At least he's going to own it, right?
Well, that's his only way through this, I think. And he just has to say, you know, like I said this and I meant it and we're moving on. And in fact, I think that's what he said. Didn't he say earlier this week that I'm not going to talk about this
and
anymore?
And then he did.
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
he did. Yeah. So, you
good
know,
luck to him on that, by
but
the way.
But if you're the Republicans, you know, you've got the New York Daily News front page of Speaker Ryan and Donald Trump, and
that.
You know, the headline for was speaking for Ryan said, "I'm with racist." You know, I mean, they say, well, what he said was racist, but we still support him for president. I don't know how you.
That's why I feel bad for Hillary Clinton.
Mix the words around. I support a racist for president. I mean, that's what those words are saying.
Poor Hillary Clinton. There is Paul Ryan saying Donald Trump is a racist. We still prefer that to Hillary Clinton. That's got to sting a little bit. Hey, are you guys willing to sell your firstborn child for tickets to Hamilton? Are you caught up in Hamilton fever in Chicago?
Not really, but we have another editorial in the paper talking about just kind of the unfairness of how technology now has allowed basically robotics and computer systems to buy up huge sections of theaters and then sell the tickets for outrageous prices. Now you can is it market? Is this just the free market, you know, supply and demand?
Mm-hmm,
or is
mm-hmm.
there something fraudulent about it? I don't know the answer to that.
That goes all the way back 25 years ago. I was at the court hearing when the scalping was ruled legal in Illinois. You know, it used to be illegal. You could not sell tickets for more than face value. And there was a judge who said, yes, you could. And all these ticket brokers popped up. We used to not have those. I hate that.
It's illegal in New York, but the bots get past the system. It's crazy. Did you guys see what the average StubHub price is for Hamilton tickets in New York now?
More than 1,000, isn't it?
Well, $875 per is the StubHub price on average right now. And that's coming to Chicago, too.
Well, there is the market, right? I mean, these guys, these producers of this play have tickets, and they are worth a certain amount of money. And when you don't sell them for approximately that value, you're just creating this investment opportunity. I mean,
why we have to agree not to criticize them when the tickets, and they're going to, prime nights closer to Christmas will be $600.
I think the way they're handling it, and their editorial, and I think our news story today explained that, which is they're going to sell these tickets for $600, $700, and then they're going to set aside a certain number to be given away at a lottery price of $10.
Right.
And then they're going to also allow school groups to come in and so on. So they're going to try to, because if you charge that much for tickets, you're going to get an older, whiter audience for sure to a play that's obviously, Hamilton's got this whole.
Yeah, I'm not sure
hip-hop.
I feel that. I guess I think I'd rather at least the producers making the. You know, mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course, they deserve
unbelievable
the
money more than the ticket brokers.
Of course.
Yeah, no kidding. They say it'll be here for a couple of years, so if everybody relaxes, we'll all eventually be able to get it for maybe just $100 a ticket. Okay, recommendations time. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
You are seeing, reading, watching, or drinking. Eric, what's your recommendation this week?
I love that. I add value to the show.
You change the world.
Absolutely do.
It's like part of our staple now.
I am going to recommend Wiener.
Oh, did you see it?
A documentary, yes. The documentary about Anthony Weiner's attempted comeback when he tried to run for mayor of New York after his first sex scandal broke. And if you remember how that story folded, he allowed this unprecedented access to these filmmakers to follow him around as he ran for mayor a second time. If you remember, during that race, he was doing pretty well in the polls. The second sex scandal broke out where he had, you know, remember when he was Carlos Danger? He found out that he, right. After he had been caught, after he had to resign in disgrace from the U.S. Congress, he was still doing this stuff. He was still texting his photos of his junk to strange women on the internet.
And the access that he's continued to give, I've only read about this and seen clips, Eric, but it's pretty remarkable that he's now living this for the cameras,
it's
right?
It's unbelievable, the access they got. Whom
do you
I didn't
feel sad
that.
For him? I mean, how did you come away from that?
It's a fascinating character. He really is. I mean, his vanity, and he's a very smart guy, and he was a great politician in a lot of ways. But for 20 minutes, for just 20 minutes, he was texting pictures of his penis to people.
So you didn't think the documentary was limited? wimp?
No. No,
it rose to the occasion.
And the fun thing to watch, you watch Huma Abedin, his wife, who's a top aide to Hillary Clinton, who's clearly not fully on board with this documentary project.
Right,
like, so she's like looking at these guys like, get out of here. But
really?
No, it's a look like you've never seen at narcissism in politics.
Yeah, really. How about you, Kristen? What do you like this week?
Well, I would recommend that everybody go to the Chicago Tribune website. We posted a video of a debate last week in the Illinois House when the House passed a budget that was $7 billion out of balance. And it's 6 minutes long. It just kind of lifts the curtain a little bit as to how government works. It's a back and forth between a Republican who is questioning line items in the budget and Mike Madigan's top lieutenant who is trying to defend the spending, and it's quite remarkable.
How about you, Steve Bertrand?
Well, I've foreshadowed my choice with the little noise earlier, but Blues Fest this weekend in Chicago, and Alligator Records is celebrating its 45th anniversary. And, you know, back in the day, I was a huge Alligator Records fan. It's a blues label started by a guy named Bruce Iglauer and continues to publish music by Chicago blues artists. And they're out today on June 10th. With a compilation, a couple disc set, you can download it too, of the things that they've done through the years. So I think we should celebrate Alligator Records.
Nice. And my recommendation will be a Facebook page. It's our own. It's the Mincing Rascals Facebook page. I want you to like us there, or at least check me out on King John on my
Facebook
page.
Sounds like Anthony Weiner there.
Well,
check me out.
I've posted the picture of the tip jars. You know how you vote with your change, like, do you like A or B? And people put the coins in the one at coffee shops and stuff like that. Well, these are three tip jars. Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, anybody else. The first two have like 9 pennies in there, and the other one is completely overflowing with cash and coins.
Wow.
And that's shareable, and it's a good metaphor for where we are, I think, a lot of people in this country. And we'll post a picture of that on my Facebook page and on the Mincing Rascals one. And that's the Mincing Rascals for this week. Thank you to our producer, Kristen Decker, and our engineer, Bob Ferguson. This is John Williams. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNplus.com. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 1:30 to 2 p.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.